Welcome back, everyone, to this week's Smoky Mountain Wrestling episode number 18 from May the 30th of 1992. Doc, we are in Harriet, Tennessee in the Lincoln Memorial University Gym. Most of this week's episode is letting the good fans of Smoky Mountain Wrestling know what the results are from the Volunteer Slam that took place on May the 22nd of 1992. So we're going to spend a good bit of this episode going through the individual results and recaps of the Volunteer Slam. Now, before we get kicked off into things and start running through this week's episode, what were your thoughts? You said you don't like review shows, so I'll kind of leave. I'd love to know what you thought about the fact of how they handled this in the TV this week.
Well, good morning to you too, sir. I'm doing fine. Thanks for asking.
No problem. You're still pissy from
but I get it.
A few weeks
I get
ago.
It. I get it, pal. You're excited because we are going to crown a champion. So I get it. You want to hop right in, and I'm right with you. To your question, I usually hate recap shows, but this is a little different for me because we're recapping some content that we haven't seen or covered on this show. So I'm actually lift my recap ban and be treating this as fresh, hot, new, piping hot, new content. And I got to say, I am excited because we are going to have a heavyweight champion. The strap will be awarded. The trophy is on play. We are going to have a new leader of Smoky Mountain Wrestling at the end of the hour, buddy.
Yep, we sure will. And also we have a Buddy Landell and Tim Horner match at the end of it as well. So yeah, am I saying that right? I'm trying to remember. Shit. Yeah, we do. What am I thinking? So we got that at the end as well. So that's why we're still in the same gym. And also what we have is Bob and Dutch there in this gym as well. Kind of, they're directing traffic, sending it back to the recap of the Volunteer Slam. Now, I did want to say this too, before we get into it. The Volunteer Slam also, you've watched it, right? You watched the whole thing? The 2 hour version of it?
Sure. Well, let's say I have.
Yeah, well, what I wanted to say was, and this is not any shade on the Volunteer Slam. The Volunteer Slam is not terrible by any means. But I do like how they did the TV recap of it.
I thought they did a fine job on the TV show to recap it for those who weren't in attendance that evening.
Right. And for those who, if you're listening to this and haven't watched the Volunteer Slam and have only watched this episode, which is episode 18 again from May 30th of 1992, I thought they did a good job of it. So let's jump into things. Dutch and Bob open the show. Bob tells us that this is a very special edition of Smoky Mountain Wrestling, and we're going to be recapping and reviewing all of the highlights of the Volunteer Slam that took place, again, May 22nd, 1992, in Knoxville, Tennessee. Dutch tells us he was there, and there were a few surprises that night. Dutch also tells us that today's main event will be White Lightning Tim Horner versus Buddy Landell, the Nature Boy Buddy Landell, in a rematch of the Mountain Mayhem match where Landell threw powder in Horner's eyes, as you recall from last week. So we got 5,000 on the line in that match with those two today. Bob then puts a bow on the closing segment and throws it over to Les Thatcher and Phil Rainey for our Volunteer Slam highlights and results. Now, Doc, I'm going to keep it moving here, and then you can comment as we in the next segment, okay?
Sure thing, bro.
Les and Phil mainly tell us, as things are thrown over to them, that Dutch Mantel and Mark Aston are going to be conducting interviews backstage tonight at the Slam. Doc, before we talk about Dutch and Mark as they throw it to them, I want to talk about our announced team for the Slam. I like Les Thatcher. I think Les Thatcher is a great asset to the business of professional wrestling. I actually like Phil Rainey as a bit of a reporter, I guess you would say. I thought Rainey did a good job on the Road to Knoxville episode with Cornette that we did. I think Les has a great radio and commentary voice. But I really wish, after listening to watching 17 episodes of Smoky Mountain Wrestling, that Bob Cottle and Dutch were calling the action. So I wanted to get your thoughts about the announced team and what you feel as well.
The first thing I noticed when they throw it to Les and Phil, the lighting is terrible.
Oh, it's bad.
And I kind of mean it's a compliment.
It's bad.
The problem I have with them two together, those two together, is that both appear to be the play-by-play guy. They both appear to be the straight man. So they're just two straight men. And I don't mean heterosexual. I mean playing straight, giving you what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, we know.
So there's nobody playing off of that. You know, Dutch does that really well. So I don't know. Maybe Kyle was tied up that night. Maybe he was attending a Klan rally somewhere.
What?
He worked for a prominent. He worked for Jesse Helms in the South.
Okay, can we not get into shit like that? I mean, so what? We're talking about wrestling here. We're not judging Bob on if he supported the Klan or not.
Bob Caudle, except for that stuff.
Okay.
And so, you know, I don't know. We also have Mark Aston, and that's a new face to us in Smoky Mountain. I can't remember how much of a role he plays, but, you know, he's back there to talk to the babies as the show goes on.
Right. So that's it. That's your thoughts.
What do you want me to say?
That was very lackluster, but okay. Dutch and Mark keep it short and sweet as they show them backstage individually. They both tell us that they'll be conducting backstage interviews, and that's that. I mean, there wasn't really much more to it. Dutch and Bob Caudle welcome us back to today's episode, and they immediately throw us to Dixie and the Dirty White Boy in their first round opening match in progress. And here's the thing. The first round, it's really rapid fire the way they do it. So, like, Dutch and Bob throw it at these opening matches, and then we go boom, 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 all the way through the first round. So, Doc, I will stop at the end of each match recap, and then you tell me what you think, and then we'll go from there. So, Dutch and Bob welcome us back to today's episode. And again, they throw us immediately to Dixie Dynamite and Dirty White Boy in their first round match. Based on the commentary, it would appear that Dixie has been taking a lot of punishment throughout the match. Of course, we're joined midway, and they don't show us the whole thing. Ron Wright is on the outside of the ring, in case you're wondering, in his wheelchair, a little hard to see because of the bad lighting. Dixie finally fires up and starts battling back against Dirty White Boy. He hits the Dirty White Boy with a Confederate kick, but Dirty White Boy is able to get his foot up on the ropes to break the count. Dixie picks Dirty White Boy up, shoots him into the ropes again, and goes for a big drop kick, but he misses and takes a face bump. Dirty White Boy then quickly goes on the attack, picks him up, and delivers the Bucksnort Blaster to win his opening round match. Doc, stop me if I missed anything here.
Man, I love that lighting. My notes here said it's dark as fuck. It's so dark that the corners of the ring are dark.
Yeah.
So here's the thing, and boy, this is we're watching these episodes with the fine tooth comb so we can deliver our fans exactly what they deserve. And so I'm nitpicking here. In the arena, I wish the fans were seated a little closer to the ring so you could see like their feet, their legs, their knees around the ring. The ring seems kind of isolated because you can't see them in the shot. But again, nitpicking, Dirty White Boy looks good early in the tournament. He's looking strong and he looks like he's going to be a force to be reckoned with.
You can't see the fans because it's so fucking dark. If they had better lighting, you would be able to see at least the front
row.
You don't
need better lighting, man.
You do need a little bit better lighting. Well, and the fact that it's not necessarily HD because it's 1992 also has an effect on what you can see and can't see. Because it is really grainy when you look at the video.
It's all right. Yeah. It's good.
And the camera the hard camera shot, too, is really far off and up high. So that's part of it as well. But right. It is what it is. I mean, it's Smoky Mountain Wrestling. Next matchup is Buddy Landell and Primetime Brian Lee. There's no break at all as we transition from the last match to this one. We go straight from the previous one with Primetime Brian Lee and Buddy Landell. The match is joined in progress, as they all are. Primetime Brian Lee does something as we get into this match that I've never seen him do yet. He goes to the top rope and he attempts to deliver a knee drop. That's a big old boy doing some flying. Buddy starts to work the leg after he misses that, and then he goes to put on the figure four in Primetime Brian Lee. As he does this, Primetime Brian Lee cradles him into a small package and gets a quick pinfall, which moves him into the next round of the tournament. Doc, what you got from this match before I jump into Tim Horner and Paul Orndorff?
I thought Primetime Brian Lee finally worked like the big boy on the block. It was the first time where he looked like he was going to use that 6'6", 6'8", whatever he decides to be today to his advantage. My note here was is that I thought Primetime Brian Lee looked better than we've seen him look maybe up until this point. Maybe he's Primetime for a reason. This is the Primetime Big Show tournament. Maybe he only turns it on for the game, you know?
I'm going to hold comment because I think what you say definitely holds true as we get into the later rounds of this thing. Tim Horner and Paul Dorf. Paul Dorf. Tim Horner and Paul Orndorff. No break once again. Horner and Orndorff are going at it as they take us to the last 3 minutes of the match. There are plenty of go Tim go chants, which, you know, that was good. I mean, considering how we've kind of
over.
Yeah. We've given Tim a hard time, but there were a lot of chants. You can hear him. We get to where there is 1 minute remaining. Orndorff is standing on the outside of the ring. Tim is in the inside attempting to grab Orndorff by the hair to bring him back into the ring. Orndorff does something I don't remember seeing. That is, he takes Horner's right leg and somehow wraps it to where it's tied up under the bottom rope. Orndorff then jumps in the ring and pins Horner. The ref doesn't see it. The reason Horner obviously can't kick out is because Horner's leg is literally over the second rope, but underneath the third, the bottom, tied up, and we get the 1-2-3, giving Orndorff the win. Doc, anything on that very quick segment that they showed us?
Well, I was wondering, you know, I was wondering what the backstage instruction to Paul Orndorff was. I was like, Paul was probably told he'd go over, but Horner had to stay strong. So, all right, we're going to take it down to the wire here. And Paul Orndorff's like, what? I can't just go out there and beat his ass?
I don't know. That's a good one, especially considering we're recording this. It won't air for about a month, but we're recording this on December the 16th. It sounds like after listening to the Jim Cornette experience that Tim was a bit of a prick.
Is that the last episode of the Jim Cornette? Because I haven't listened.
Yes,
so.
You're going to enjoy. I don't want to spoil it for you, but they talk about some Smoky Mountain stuff in how Tim was to deal with.
Jim Cornette and Brian Last need to leave the Smoky Mountain to us.
That's a joke, everyone. Obviously, Cornette ran the fucking promotion, so we love his input on it.
Hey, he had his time to run it. Now let us talk about it. I did think it was a slick move by Orndorff to take to get out of there with the win, and again, Orndorff is looking like a favorite as well.
Yeah, most definitely. We then go, again, very quick transition. There's really no break in between. We go to Gibson and Jimmy Golden. Golden's working the knee throughout the segment of the match that they're showing. Gibson turns it around very quickly in the highlights when he ducks two Jimmy Golden clothesline attempts and then hits Golden with a bulldog to get the 1-2-3 on Golden. Robert Gibson, rock and roll Robert Gibson, advances in the tournament. Doc, thoughts before I move on to what we have next?
No.
Okay. Yeah, that one was real quick. I mean, there's really not much to say about it. They didn't. I mean, if you want to see the whole match, you can look at the Volunteer Slam, but it was real quick. You know, rock and roll Robert Gibson gets the win.
I think it's pretty clear here that neither of these guys is going to win this tournament. So
just from the way they did the recap. Yeah. Just from the way they did the recap. So we then go back to Dutch and Bob. Bob tells us that that was a great first round, but it gets even wilder from here. Bob tells us we still have four men that are alive in the tournament. I want to ask this question before I throw it over to anything else. Doc, any surprises to you at this point in the opening round of the tournament?
I don't think there's any real surprises. You know, one thing is, I guess Landell losing in the first round might be considered one, but considering who he drew in the first round, it's probably not that big of a surprise.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't find any surprises. Let me just say that. There's nothing surprising to me at this point. Let me recap, though. We got Primetime Brian Lee versus Dirty White Boy, Robert Gibson versus Paul Orndorff, so that's who's left in the semifinal / second round. We then go straight to the Dirty White Boy and Primetime Brian Lee. Match. Now, they show a lot of this match. Match starts off, Primetime Brian Lee is on fire as Dirty White Boy is selling his ass off. There's a lot of heat between these two. Dirty White Boy has been picking on Primetime Brian Lee in his promos over the last few weeks. So you had to feel this would be a good match. Just a quick side note, Ron Wright is on the outside in case you're wondering. He's sitting in his wheelchair, although very hard to see because he's in the darkness, so to say. At some point, Primetime Brian Lee starts bleeding. The footage is very dark, but based on what I can see, he's got a nice little juice job going on. He's got blood all over. It's good blood. It's all over not only his head, but his chest and torso. And Dirty White Boy is laying some great looking punches into him for a good part of the match that we see. He's laying it in, and it looks great. Dirty White Boy also hits him. We keep going. Dirty White Boy hits him with a power slam. Primetime Brian Lee fights back. There's a little bit of Hulk Hogan type essence here with Primetime Brian Lee that I'm sure you hated, Doc. Any comments on primetime Brian Lee thus far in this match and this Hogan-like comeback from you?
No, not really. I just, you know, these two guys are at the top end of the card, obviously, and they are getting it on in this match. They're strapping it on. You got blood. I thought something interesting I got was at one point Les Thatcher says, "That's a bad one. His face is covered in blood." My note here was, I bet that wasn't in the top 50 crimson masks that Les has ever seen in his life. And that's nothing against Primetime. He had a good one and bled really well, but Les has been around for years. The things that guy has seen. And did you notice at one point, Phil Rainey said about Ron Wright, "I'm still waiting for him to come out of that chair."
I heard that comment. I heard that comment. Yes, I did.
But I think, you know, I'm going to go ahead and wait on the rest until you get us to the end here.
Yeah, so back to the match. Dirty White Boy does fight back, and he gets the upper hand. Dirty White Boy then goes to the second rope, comes off of misses on Primetime Brian Lee. Primetime Brian Lee then gets on top of him, gets the 1-2-3 in the win, but it doesn't stop here. Dirty White Boy goes to the outside and decides to lay waste to Primetime Brian Lee's carcass. Doc, I'll let you add your thoughts here because that's how you book it.
I thought this was a phenomenal match. My notes were, this was easily my favorite singles match that we've seen yet in 18 episodes on Smoky Mountain. And they are not only advancing things in the tournament, but as we will see in weeks to come, this is setting up some other feuds. So again, nothing but thumbs up from Doc on this one. That was really, I thought, really well done.
Yeah, the thing about this was, it reminded me of just the old days. So Primetime Brian Lee is going to advance in this tournament. And unlike what the fucking WWE shit show does these days, Primetime Brian Lee is beat to a bloody pulp. He is beat by a man even after he defeats the man. So he wins, but Dirty White Boy's like, no, fuck this shit. Yeah, you might have won, but I'm about to beat your fucking ass, boy. And he lays waste to him. Well, you know what that does? It tends to draw sympathy for someone. Something that WWE has no fucking clue how to do anymore. None whatsoever. And so it meant something.
And it keeps Dirty White Boy strong.
Yes, he lost, but now he's going to lay waste to him. And that's what he did. And you're going to see why I say that as this thing plays out. So I just really thought that was just a fabulous way to have Primetime Brian Lee win and then kind of extend things as we move forward in Smoky Mountain Wrestling, because I that's the other part of it that we're going to see play out here in later episodes. So real quick, before we move on, they go backstage did you have anything else about the match, Doc?
No, good job though. I like it.
Yeah, it was great. They go backstage and it's Dutch and Dirty White Boy, and Dirty White Boy is now about to cut a promo on the match, Primetime Brian Lee, etc. So I thought it was great. Let's listen in right now.
Okay, you little brain surgeon, out there, I'm waiting for the Dirty White Boy to go come in here. He's right here with me.
It's just not right. The biggest fluke that has ever hit this planet. Primetime Brian Lee, you lucked up, brother. There's not a chance in you nowhere that you could ever, ever beat me again. Well, let me tell you something, Primetime Brian Lee. I may not become the Smoky Mountain heavyweight champion tonight, but brother, neither will you, because I'll make sure that you don't win this belt.
Primetime, I'd hate to be you.
All right, Doc. Thoughts on the promo?
So my thoughts on, well, I think it's a good, I thought it was a good promo, and I thought it achieved what it did, but I think it also achieved something else that I started thinking about, you know, we've kind of spent the first 4 months, 18 episodes, whatever, to get to today.
Yep.
And what this effectively does is hand the baton and transition the feud from Dutch and Primetime Brian Lee to Dirty White Boy and Primetime Brian Lee.
Yeah, it's true, too, because, yeah, that was a lot of the early on in the first few months. You got a good point there.
So that's part of what this angle promo into the match, into the promo does is kind of hand it off to somebody who's going to be more of a full-time performer. Cause I got the sense that Dutch was kind of filling in double duty Wrestling every once in a while, but he was trying to transition out of being in the ring, so he was kind of helping out. But now you got two guys that are at the top of the card that are about to strap it on in a feud. So,
yeah, and let's be real. Dutch has been great on commentary. I mean, we talk about it every week. He's got these. He sends us a zinger weekly, and him and Bob Cottle on commentary is great. So it did transition it. I like what Dirty White Boy said. You know, he stayed strong again. He cut a great promo after he just lost, and he did what heels do. He said, I'm going to make sure that Primetime Brian Lee doesn't win the belt. So we'll see how that plays out as we get deeper in the episode. And I really like that. All right, we go to the next matchup. They right after that promo, they cut straight over to Robert Gibson and Paul Orndorff. Robert Gibson is selling his left leg. This is this is greatly hurting Gibson, as he's having trouble getting any type of offense on Paul Orndorff because of his leg injury. Very quick highlight. Orndorff gets a heel type win here where he takes out Gibson's leg and then pins Gibson with a big grasp of the tights to make sure Gibson doesn't get up. Doc, thoughts before we move on? Because I mean, this was real, real quick. I mean, there was nothing. They didn't. Basically, they showed Orndorff being a heel, aggressive heel, and getting a cheap win, which that's what heels are supposed to do.
Well, and I thought that Orndorff had a pretty favorable draw in the tournament where he got Horner and Gibson, who are both, again, I will say it, capable guys in the ring, but they're both smaller guys standing next to Paul Orndorff. So he advances to the finals I won't say an easy draw, but certainly where he was the dominant physical specimen on that side of the card.
Well, let's look at it like this, too. What they did with Primetime Brian Lee, they were trying to draw some sympathy, and that's why they did it with Dirty White Boy.
Yep.
If you think about the way they set it up, he's your babyface. So what do you want your babyface to do? You want your babyface to deal with a lot of adversity. That way the people can have a vested interest into wanting to see him win. So basically, the way Cornette booked it, he put the boots to Primetime Brian Lee to make it make sense from a storyline perspective.
Wait a minute. You mean you're supposed to put some thought into how you book this shit?
Yeah, not this. Dude, I'm hot right now about WWE. I have always been the one to tell you, no, you know, you got to do, give them the benefit of the doubt. Look, by the time this airs, maybe they would have done something that would pop the territory. I don't know.
They won't. Let me go ahead and spoil Christmas for you. They won't.
We're recording this on December the 16th, 2016. Okay, so we're 9 days before Christmas. This won't air until the new year. And I say all that to say,
Happy New Year, motherfuckers.
They're just pissing me off. They've pissed me off to no end, and I'm just completely frustrated with them. But I don't want to make it a WWE bashing thing, but my point is...
The point is, and one of the reasons we started doing this, and one of the reasons we continue to do this, other than the extreme amount of enjoyment we're having doing it, is that it was born out of a frustration with how WWE does it. We wanted to get away from having to watch it, having to talk about it, and let's talk about something that we actually like. And I think what you said here, and hey, as much as it pains me to put you over here, is, you know, and it's maybe something I didn't even think about until right now, although subconsciously I may have, with the Orndorff had an easy route, is that this bracket didn't really come to life for me in the weeks leading up to it until I saw it play out in the ring. And it's because there was a reason for it, and maybe not always that the reason has to slap you in the face, but it's subliminally, subconsciously pointing you into how to feel and what reaction they want to get without having it being so clear in your face. So guess what? They're using some psychology on how they book this shit. It's a novel fucking concept in today's business, but it was just how it was done back in the day.
Yeah, so when people like think that Cornette is being just a curmudgeon and he's just an old timer who, you know, who just wants to shit on everything current. No, he's got the fucking skins on the wall. And when you look at something like this to say, hey, this guy knew what he was doing.
Same goes for Doc. Well, I've got the skins on the wall too. So when I tell you something, believe it.
The only skin you got on the wall is that PhD that you got in college.
In psychology, brother.
And that don't have nothing to... Well, yeah. That's not wrestling psychology, asshole. But anyway, let's move on.
Close enough.
We go to a quick segment with Dutch and Bob Cottle. Dutch tells us it's been a long and hard road to get to this point in the finals. But let's get to it and see who's going to win the Smoky Mountain Gold and to see the champion crown. Now, before I get started, remember all that stuff I said about sympathy and playing a role and the baby face and
well, here we go.
Yeah, here we go. So here's the fish hook. It's been set. It's in the mouth. The way Cornette did this, you couldn't have done it any better. You could not have done it any better. And I believe this could work today. I know people would go, that's hokey horseshit. Have you seen this shit they put out nowadays? This shit could work today. So here we go. It's Orndorff versus Primetime Brian Lee in the finals. This starts off with Bullet Bob making it seem like Orndorff is going to win the Smoky Mountain Wrestling heavyweight title by forfeit. Primetime Brian Lee, as he says, has lost a lot of blood in his previous match with the Dirty White Boy. Bullet Bob then seemingly awards the title to Orndorff. I felt like there were some cheers listening to this, because as Orndorff is holding up the belt and mildly celebrating, what did you think?
Well, let's talk about that. This, I mean, if you had 500 people or 300 people in small towns in an intimate setting where you could work on them, maybe Orndorff is positioned as a heel. You get the big show in the big city, you probably have some more casual fans going to check it out. Well, they know Paul Orndorff from WWF television. Mm-hmm. So his name recognition probably caused a little bit of that.
I'll give you an example. We've talked about this on Booking the Territory a few weeks back on our Thursday show. I was at the Crockett Cup in 86, and I remember Dusty and Flair working each other, and there's a row of people kind of in front of us but to the right, and I kind of remember these guys, they were cheering for Flair the whole time.
So, they were smart people.
Well, the thing was, even back then, there were people who liked the heels. I mean, don't get me wrong, Flair got a lot of heat, but he had his fans as well. Because, there's this misconception that, oh, everybody hated the heels. It wasn't that everybody hated the heels. It was the people that hated the heels, they really fucking hated the heels. But the heels still had some fans. I mean, there were a lot of Horsemen fans back in the day. And I'm not talking during the Monday Night Wars. I'm talking about, I mean, you go back and listen to some of them Saturday night shows when Rick's cutting promos in the TBS studio. There's a lot of fucking people cheering in that studio and popping at the stuff he's saying. So,
true.
I don't know. Yeah, I kind of agree with your thoughts as well on that. So, as we proceed, we hold up because Primetime Brian Lee is coming to the ring. Primetime Brian Lee grabs the stick and says, Paul Orndorff, Knoxville, Tennessee, I've come too far to let some doctor tell me I can't win that belt. Paul, if you want that belt, you're going to have to go through me. Doc, thoughts on how they did this with the injury angle?
Man, I thought they set this up pretty much perfect.
Yep. So at this point, Primetime Brian Lee enters the ring. Bullet Bob aggressively rips the shit out of the belt away from Orndorff's hands. As Primetime Brian Lee enters the ring, Orndorff, being the great heel that he is, attacks Primetime Brian Lee. Primetime Brian Lee is really selling the punches and turnbuckle shots Orndorff gives him. You know, a quick note, Primetime Brian Lee's head is wrapped, but you can see obvious blood coming through the white gauze. They advance in the match, and as they're fighting on the outside, you can see that Primetime Brian Lee is bleeding again. I'm not sure if this is a fresh cut or if it's the pre-existing one, but in any case,
well, you know what my note here, my note here was.
What's that?
Fuck family friendly. This is for the goddamn strap.
Yeah, that's great too. And they're slowly getting away from family friendly at this point. I don't know if I've heard Bullet Bob say family friendly in a while, actually. I mean, I say a while. This is only episode 18, so we're 4.5 months in.
Well, they're still going to roll out that. They're still going to roll out that commercial if you want to have them down at your school or civic center while we choke somebody out. That'll go for another 3 years.
While a Russian hangs an American,
right?
And Dutch whips a dude with shoe baby. Yeah, that's right too. Now, I'm not complaining here about the family friendly. Just want to make that announcement. Not only is Primetime Brian Lee bleeding, but Orndorff nails Primetime Brian Lee with a chair to the head and then bangs his head on the table. Now, I could swear Bullet Bob and referee Mark Curtis are watching all of this as it unfolds. So I guess there's no DQ at this point in the match.
I think a lot of shit's flying out the window, and it feels like it's being played by the seat of their pants, but whatever.
Yeah, whatever. I'm fine. Hey, that's Southern wrestling. Let's just fucking have a melee and decide as we go. So the finish of a match is really, really strange, though. Well, not strange, but the finish, you'll say why I say there's something strange. Because I want y'all to remember the chair shot to the head, because that should really be illegal. But anyway, Orndorff goes back to throw a punch on Primetime Brian Lee, but his elbow catches the ref, knocking him out. Bullet Bob jumps in the ring, attempting to revive the referee. Dirty White Boy runs in with a gimmick in his hand. Primetime Brian Lee, though, clubs the Dirty White Boy, and the gimmick goes flying, assuming it was some type of brass knuckles. And when I say goes flying, that bitch was supposed to fly in a ring, but it flew out the ring. Orndorff has to go get the gimmick that Dirty White Boy went flying outside. Orndorff goes to get it on the outside of the ring. Comes back in with the gimmick on his hand. He swings at Primetime Brian Lee but misses. Primetime Brian Lee hits Orndorff with an atomic drop. Orndorff bounces off the ropes through and nails Primetime Brian Lee, and both men then bump. Orndorff tries to pin Primetime Brian Lee at this point. Bullet Bob makes the two count instead of the ref, which it seems strange, but whatever. Orndorff then loads up his fist with the gimmick at this point. Primetime Brian Lee blocks Orndorff as he goes to throw the punch with the loaded fist. Bullet Bob turns around and sees this. Bullet Bob gets into a struggle with Orndorff and yanks the gimmick off of Orndorff's hand. He turns around and declares Primetime Brian Lee the winner. So I guess you can be DQ'd in this match. Because... remember, Orndorff hit him with a chair earlier, but whatever. All hell then breaks loose, as it always did in Southern wrestling back in the day. Orndorff and Dirty White Boy start putting the boots to Primetime Brian Lee. Bullet Bob gets in on the action and throws some haymakers. He throws one at Dirty White Boy. That Dirty White Boy goes flying. I mean, literally goes flying. It was beautiful. Landell and Horowitz also run in, and Bullet Bob lays them out. Bullet Bob's getting his shit in at this point. More heels and faces come in. I can't even tell who's who in there at this point because it's so dark and it just turns into a melee. But in a nutshell, they're separated at some point. Primetime Brian Lee is now our first Smoky Mountain Wrestling heavyweight champion. Doc, I said a whole lot there, so I'll stop and let you chime in.
So I like the Dirty White Boy coming out because he said in the promo before, I'm going to make sure that you don't win. So I think it makes sense for him to hit the scene and try to do what he said he was going to do. At this point, though, I my note said this was a fishy ending that I didn't think was absolutely needed, in my opinion. And so I have a question for you. I say, do you think there's any possibility that they went with this because Orndorff was hesitant to put Primetime over clean?
I mean, have you ever heard of like any type of real heat between those two?
No. It was just kind of something I thought because they really went through a lot of different things here to get to the end, and some of it didn't make sense. So there was DQ, there wasn't DQ, and it just seems like it was convoluted to a degree in order to crown your first champion. I would have thought you would have wanted a 1-2-3, but that's me. And again,
because I know what's coming next, and I think it extends storylines. Because you know, I always tell you whenever a promoter's booking something, and look, man, I'm just an indie guy who had some experience and learned from some old school veterans. But I always say that to you whenever you want to book something. It's like, okay, what are we gonna do next? So that kind of spun things off into what was gonna happen next.
Okay, fair enough.
I will say this. It is kind of crazy that Orndorff is allowed to hit Primetime Brian Lee with a fucking chair, and then he's busted with a gimmick in his hand, and that's what cost him the match.
And I don't want to overthink it and think myself into a corner where I didn't enjoy it, because I did. And the other thing I had here is the crowd was super into it, and they went apeshit when Bob Armstrong started cleaning house.
Yeah.
And I bet you, because of what will happen for the next couple of years, Corny was in the back and heard that pop Armstrong got and filed that away, because Armstrong over the next couple of years will become a bigger on-screen character than he has been in the 4 months leading up to this.
Crowd went nuts for the finish. And the thing was, too, like that was how it was back in the day. You know, the shit would hit the fan and it was like, oh, fuck, it's breaking down. We're about to light things on fire. And I just thought that was part of it, too. That was a good part of it as well. All right, so we then we're at the point that we have a champion now.
Got a champ.
We got a champ, and now we are going to the back of the backstage area where we got two interviews. We got one with Paul Orndorff, and we got one with Primetime Brian Lee. Now Dutch Mantel is conducting the Orndorff one, and Mark Aston is conducting the Primetime Brian Lee one. So we're gonna play him here for you right now.
Okay, fans, what a tremendous title match. I'm waiting for Paul Orndorff to come in here right now to talk to us about the match with Brian.
Dutch, that was a Smoky Mountain ripoff. That's exactly what it was. Absolutely. You know something, Brian Lee? You put up a pretty good fight. But so did Saddam Hussein. You see all this blood? It ain't my blood, brother. You bled all over that ring. They saw more blood in Knoxville than they did in the war. But I'm going to tell you this right now. When Mr. Wonderful steps in the ring, I've showed everybody here. Bob Armstrong, there's been a conspiracy against me ever since I came into this place. And I'm going to tell you, it goes back a long way. But it doesn't matter to me. Anywhere you want to finish this thing. What's his name again? Brian Lee, sweet thing, bleeding all over the place out there. I'm going to tell you something right now, man. This is hell looking you right in the face. And I don't care where it's at in Tennessee. You name the place. Bob Armstrong, you come to the match, because the next time you stick your nose in a match, I'm going to pile drive you, Brian Lee, and every dead gum body that's associated with this Smoky Mountain Wrestling. I'm sick and tired of it. You know what I can do and what I've done to everybody I've stepped in the ring with there. So you just wait. It's coming down soon, brother. Mr. Wonderful's got one thing on his mind, and it ain't money. It's that belt.
I couldn't have said it any better myself.
Ladies and gentlemen, here we are with the new Smoky Mountain Heavyweight Champion, Primetime Brian Lee. Brian?
You know, this should be the happiest day of my life, but it isn't. And it's two reasons why it isn't. Dirty White Boy's one, and Mr. Wonderful's number two. I tell you what, you boys underestimated me, but now it's time to pay the fiddler. Dirty White Boy, Mr. Wonderful, I don't care what it takes, where I have to go. You see my head? I won't stop till every inch of your body is covered just like my head. You can look out for Primetime Brian Lee, because I'm through playing around.
All right. So, yeah, that was...
Lots to unpack there.
Yeah. What'd you make? Go ahead. I'll let you chime in on both of them.
Well, let's start with Orndorff. Fucking great promo.
I know.
You know, I said about 10 episodes ago that I wasn't the biggest Paul Orndorff fan in the world, and I think I may have been wrong on that. I'm starting – every week that goes by is a greater appreciation for his abilities. He comes in and says it's a Smoky Mountain ripoff. I pop my ass off at that. What a great line.
Yeah, he popped me on that.
The other one that I thought was funny is that they saw more blood in Knoxville than they saw in the war. The right. War. The war. The
I
war.
Assume he's talking about the Civil War. Yes.
Yeah.
But he also mentioned Saddam Hussein, which, I mean, for our young listeners who don't realize it, that we had gone to war with Saddam around this time, too. So.
I signed up for selective services, and like 2 months later, we invaded Kuwait. Man, I was a scared motherfucker.
See, I was still too young. I was 2 years behind you. So yes, but yeah, that was sick.
Doc might not have been taking his vitamins, but he was following the Hulkster's advice to say his prayers. Let me tell you that much right there. So Orndorff was hot. He felt like he's been ripped off. He demands satisfaction. He's going to get revenge. Fucking great promo. Lots of stuff there. Primetime. Boy, my note here was Primetime Brian Lee looks like he's been shot in the head with a gun.
Yeah, he but you know what? That's what sold it too.
Well, I mean, and so here's my note is this was a good promo, and Primetime Brian Lee really stepped up at the Volunteer Slam. We've lobbed some shots at him as well over the past few months about his promos and about some of the things about him. But he really stepped up and didn't look out of place with a couple of guys that were older than him. In Orndorff and Dirty White Boy, he looked comfortable in that setting. And congrats to Primetime Brian Lee. He is the first Smoky Mountain Heavyweight Champion.
Yes. Now, you want to know why I said earlier they did this right. You got the guy. Orndorff is the heel. And Primetime Brian Lee is the babyface. When you look at that promo, the guy who got the belt and won looks like he's been through a war and has beat to a bloody pulp. Orndorff doesn't have a scratch on him.
He might go work out later.
Right. But the guy who won your first heavyweight title has some sympathy. Like, the people can get behind him. God, that guy got whooped, and he fucking won. Holy shit, man. That guy beat to a bloody pulp, and he's the one
who won
the belt.
Hey, I know that wrestling's fake, but that guy took an ass whooping.
Right. So, I just, we just don't see what you saw right there today. And this isn't even the best or great stuff that Smoky Mountain has to offer. This is like an introductory to it. So I really enjoyed it. Thought there was good payoff. Look, it kind of dragged for a while, this whole tournament and getting to it and getting to that point. We kind of poked some fun at how some people were selected and some people, you know, who should have been in it and said they were going to be in it, like Gordy, ended up not being in it, and we poked some holes in some of that. But you got to admit, when it came time to the payoff and the big match and the big event, they put Primetime Brian Lee over. He's over as a babyface. He got some sympathy. Orndorff got some heat. Dirty White Boy got some heat. And in the end, we ended up with a really, really good tournament. So I thought they did good. Well, good job. Well done there. All right, Doc, you want to get there? We got to get to the rest of the episode. You want to get to it?
Let's do this thing.
All right, so we got the Heavenly Bodies versus the Party Patrol, the Rich Brothers. Remember the storyline here behind why it's the Rich Brothers versus the Heavenly Bodies is because the Heavenly Bodies damaged the knee of Jackie Fulton and the Fantastics, who couldn't compete due to this. Bob Cottle and Dutch throw us to the match. And Doc, have you ever seen a missed back elbow off the top rope in a match?
No.
This is the spot that from Dr. Tom that leads to that hot tag. I don't think I've ever seen that in a wrestling match. And
I hadn't seen it, but I'll tell you something else I'd never seen that you glossed right the hell over was that when they first cut to the match, we are graced by watching Stanfield Wallace Lane or whatever his fucking name
Wallace
is.
Wallace Stanfield Lane.
Whatever. He's in the ring breaking it down, dancing. I was like, what the fuck? Go back if you didn't catch that and take a look.
I didn't, but I'm sure it was definitely a sight for sore eyes with his beaver pelt.
The other thing I noticed before the missed backdrop, or elbow drop, which I hadn't seen, is it's like, you know, I don't know if I could prove this, but it seems to have gotten darker in that ring. So I'm not sure, you know, it seemed that ring is darker than it was during the heavyweight tournament.
I don't know. It could have been the lens on the camera. I mean, there's so many factors that could have played in that. I have no clue. Dr. Tom misses the elbow drop. Johnny Rich comes in on fire. He's cleaning house, just like you'd like to see in an old school tag match. Eventually, Cornette runs some interference with the ref and one of the Riches. While one of the Riches is distracted with Cornette, the other is laid out on. What the fuck did I just put in my notes? Basically, Cornette is distracting one of the Riches. Dr. Tom then gives a solid kick to the other Rich in the ring to the back of the head, which then Wallace Stanfield Lane gets the pinfall in the 1-2-3. It was real quick, the segment that they showed. So in a nutshell, the Heavenly Bodies retained their Smoky Mountain Wrestling tag belts. What did I miss, Doc?
Nothing, and no real big surprise there.
Yeah, I had never seen the results of this until watching it. But what I mean is I hadn't read any spoilers or anything. There's no way I thought that the Party Patrol were going to win this belt. So it is what it is. I just didn't see it. So, Doc, we then go to a backstage segment, which is the interview now with the Party Patrol. Let me cue this puppy up, and then we'll listen to it and react to it live.
Fans, here we are back in the dressing room with the Party Patrol, Johnny and David Rich, after that tough tag team match, guys.
Let me just say something. You know, the Party Patrol has been looking forward to coming back to the Smoky Mountain wrestling area for a long time now. But you know something, Jim Cornette? You got two good wrestlers in Tom Pritchard and Stan Lane. And that's why I don't understand why they got to take stuff off and put on their boot and kick me in the back of the head. Now, if you want to fight, boys, we can fight. But let me tell you something. We've been the tag team champions around here before, and we plan on being it again. So wherever it is, buddy, just get in the ring and come be and be ready, because we know what we're going to do.
That's right, Heavenly Bodies, Jim Cornette. It don't matter where it is. You're going to see the riches. We're going to fight fire with fire.
I thought they cut a nice little promo after their loss.
Sure.
Look, I'm not going to fool myself, though. They're not the Fantastics, and they're not the Rock and Roll Express.
Well, the Rock and Roll Express isn't here, so I don't know what you're talking about.
My point is, they're not the Fantastics. And
spoiler alert.
They're not the Fantastics, and they're not the Rock and Roll Express. Now, I don't have much.
That was a decent old school baby face wrestling
promo.
Yeah,
that's all
right.
What I'm saying. I'm not complaining about it at all. So the next segment is we go to a Bobby Fulton promo, and I won't play it here, but Bob Caudle tells us that Bobby Fulton has sent us in an interview, and they air it here. Bobby Fulton tells us that the Heavenly Bodies and Cornette are basically evil. Bobby tells us that he's had numerous people offer to be his tag partner, which is nothing new because we've heard this before. Gibson, Tim Horner all say they'll do it. They've all offered, but Bobby says he has refused and he'll wait for his brother to return. And as soon as his brother returns, Jim Cornette and the Heavenly Bodies are going to have a hell of a fight on their hands. Did you have any notes from that, Doc?
And it's basically,
you did not?
I did not.
Yeah, it's pretty much a repeat of what we've already heard, so there's nothing new there. Bob Caudle and Dutch recap the Mountain Mayhem Battle Royal from last week in the next segment. They show us the ending when Horner got screwed at the end of the Battle Royal and Landell got the win. They also show Horner's rather good promo from last week where Bullet Bob promises Horner his rematch. Horner accepts, as we know, and then we get Buddy Landell cutting a promo. Buddy says it's just another loss in his career. What's it to him? He's lost so many. So, Doc, if you give me a second, I will fast forward and get us cued. Our favorite saying, we're going to have to tell the story of cue it up one day. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of people really have no clue what we mean when we say cue it up.
I just assume that a lot of people don't understand most of the things I say.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
You know that Commissioner Bob Armstrong must be punch drunk, call him Otis Campbell or what you may, but he must be awful crazy to think that I'm going to put $5,000. Why do I have to put $5,000 up? I beat Horner fair and square right in the middle of the stinking ring. What's it to him? It's just another loss in his career. It ain't like nothing new's happening. You know what I'm talking about? So, Horner, you'd rather walk through hell with gasoline drawers on than mess with me. I'm the nature boy, Buddy Landell. You better ask around, bud.
I love Buddy Landell.
God, that was great. And I have something here that I thought about I want to bring up. And I know we're going long in this episode, but I don't think anybody's going to be upset by that. We got stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
So here, obviously the one that's easy to pick on is, say, the gasoline britches and through hell. But he says, I'm the nature boy, Buddy Landell. You better ask around. Now, the Armstrong family is certainly tied into this promotion. And we are a little bit away from seeing the Road Dog, actually, who is an Armstrong, make his debut in Smoky Mountain down the line. Now, I'm the nature boy, Buddy Landell. You better ask around. Certainly seems like it might have been updated a few years later to your ass better call somebody. I just wonder if there was any correlation there or if he was taking notes.
Possibly. I mean, it's very similar now that you say it. I hadn't thought about it until just now. But, you know, I mean, come on, man.
And I'm not saying I'm just saying that's what you're supposed to do when you're young, Road Dog, is you're supposed to learn from the veterans and see what you can make your own and put your own twist on it and all that kind of stuff. I just wonder if there's any, if you ask Road Dog about that, if he would, you know, if that meant anything to him. Probably not, maybe not, but just wonder.
I guess it's a possibility. I mean, look, even Ric Flair's woo is not originally his.
Ric Flair wasn't the first Nature Boy. Shit.
Yeah, exactly. So, come on, man. I mean,
he's the best, but he wasn't the first.
Okay, can we get off of Flair's dick now, woo, like you always do? Doc's gonna have to tell a story one day about his 3-year-old who's Doc's wife was trying to tell him to do something, tell a 3-year-old to do something, and the 3-year-old's response to his mother was, "Woo!"
That's a shoot, too.
He wasn't having it, so he wooed her. And Doc's wife was ready to put the boots to her, to him, the kid, that is. Okay.
Oh, me too. Yeah.
Let's go to our main event for the day. It's Buddy Landell and Tim Horner. And Horner comes in, and he looks like a guy who's been screwed, and I love it. None of this shit like in WWE when a guy gets screwed and the writers write them some bullshit response script. Nope. Horner comes out fired up. His music hits. He comes in a ring. He's not waiting for some fucking bullshit announcer to announce it. He just comes in, and I'm going to start kicking some ass. So as much as I give Horner shit, fuck, man. He came in, and he was ready to fight. And
let's get it on.
Let's get this shit on. We didn't bullshit it enough. Dutch and Bob start beefing about Horner having a legit beef to this match. Dutch then says, what would Tim Horner do with $5,000 anyway? Because remember, $5,000 is on the line here. Is Horner going to soup up his truck? Is he going to buy himself a gun rack? Buy him a cow or something? And then Dutch says something very comical when he mentions, at least Buddy Landell spends his money wisely. Doc, I'll stop here if you have anything clever and respectful to say.
Well, I don't. My note here was, this is as inside a joke as it will be. And I can go ahead and put a small spoiler out here because it will be a couple of years before we get to this. But it reminded me of 1995 Smoky Mountain when Tommy Rich makes fun of Buddy Landell for drinking. Sort of, Tommy Rich has a reputation as enjoying a cocktail or two. I don't know. I mean, it's just – I think it's one of those things that they're in the middle of – in the middle of this and they're trying to pop each other a little bit. So I don't know. It was good. I liked it.
I came unglued. It was, again, one of those days where it's 11:30 at night, can't sleep on a Saturday. I'm watching Smoky Mountain, taking some notes. And when I heard Dutch Mantell say that, I came unglued because at least Buddy Landell spends his money wisely. So, yeah, that was a good one. Back to the match. Buddy is getting the heat in on Horner and being cocky and doing so. He goes for a pin where he's being lazy and not even hooking a leg. They do a nice old school spot where Landell is using the ropes for leverage as he's got Horner in a bit of a chokehold. It's something you never see anymore because wrestling nowadays is just hokey fucking horse shit. The referee finally catches Buddy and breaks the hold. Not long after, Horner turns the tide and beats Buddy Landell with the natural bridge. Yeah, I'm just going to leave it at that because as soon as the natural bridge, because it was very slow, and I'll just say that. Because as soon as that happens, the natural bridge, Buddy Landell says, fucks this shit, and he starts laying the boots to Horner. He rams his head into the ring post, uses a chair on him, and he busts Horner open. Landell continues dropping some elbows on Horner and eventually rips up the $5,000 check, stuffs it in Horner's mouth, and as the baby faces hit the ring to save Horner, we go off air. I need to remind everyone what Doc mentioned last week with Landell stuffing that $5,000 check and it's right on his dick. So he takes a check that was sitting on his dick an episode earlier and he stuffs it in Horner's mouth. And I gotta say something. After listening to Cornette recently about those two, Landell might have did that shit on purpose.
Well, and I had that note if you didn't get it there. One thing that you didn't point out in Dutch's commentary is Dutch said that Bob Armstrong favors Tim Horner and Horner's getting preferential treatment. And I wonder if that was another inside statement that he was trying to tell us about.
It could have quite well been if you really think about it.
Right.
So who knows? But I don't know, man. I just really enjoyed it. You got anything else from that match?
No.
All right, so here's the thing. We got personal issues going on here. We got Horner and Landell with what I now seem to believe is there's some real-life animosity in this, which I find very...
Even better.
There's the Dirty White Boy. Now, he spun off into a feud with Lee, with Primetime Brian Lee, and it seems Paul Orndorff, maybe. So we got some things that are coming out of this. I just really thought this was a good episode. I'm going to give out some disability. We're going to give out the disability checks and the Government Cheese Award of the Week. I got to give some my disability check. I'm going to go 8 on this one. It's a review show, but I thought the way they did the tournament, I thought the main event, I thought the personal issues involved in all of this that we've talked about, I just thought it was a really good episode. Doc, what did you think?
Remember early on when I told everybody, all you guys out there, to be patient?
Yes.
While they get their angle set up?
Yes.
We're here now. Strap got awarded. Blood was spilled. feuds were set up. And in a way, I think this is sort of a, you know, the first phase, the first era, if you will, of Smoky Mountain is kind of done. The Koloffs are gone. Gordy's gone. I think Bob Holly may be gone, as a matter of fact. But we have set up our things. We've established our players. We have some champs. And we're ready to heat this thing up over the summer of 1992 in Smoky Mountain Championship Wrestling. I'm going to give this, and so I think this is by far the highest amount of disability checks I've handed out. I'm going to give this 7.8 disability checks. I usually don't like to go over 7 because I'm stingy with my disability money. But yeah, I think this was a fantastic episode, and it will propel us into the summer with some feuds.
Yeah, I agree. This is some good stuff going here. I mean, and this is me seeing what's coming in the next few episodes as well. You definitely got you got the feuds going at this point. We're not just bullshitting through episodes anymore. We're blowing and going right now. About to happen.
Well, you know what washes down your disability check is some sweet, sweet, sweet government cheese. So are you ready to hand out your government cheese?
Let me ask you this. Since I did the amount of checks first, who did you have for your government cheese?
Well, I think there's only one person that deserves the government cheese today. You win the strap, you get the cheese. So Primetime Brian Lee will get my government cheese award.
Huh. Interesting. I don't know if I'm giving – remember, we said we don't have to give it to a person. I just want to give the award to the tournament, the way they played it out.
What a cop-out.
Well, okay, fine. Fuck you, asshole. Let's just do it like this then. I am going to give the award to – give me Paul Orndorff. Give me Orndorff in this one. And the reason I say that is I want to say Primetime Brian Lee, but I just think that – Orndorff was such a great heel that when they cut that promo and you watch Orndorff cut that promo and he looks like you said, he's ready to go to the gym and work out. And then you look at Primetime Brian Lee and he looks like he's been through a war, but he's the guy standing there with the belt. That's why I did that.
You're using the line of logic that Piper never gets enough credit for building Hulkamania.
Well, it's that's a fact.
But it's the same argument. Everybody gives Hogan the credit, but he wouldn't have had that credit if Piper hadn't done his job.
Well, and then the other part too is it's not just Orndorff in this one; it's Dirty White Boy as well. I mean, right. let's not forget he was another obstacle for Primetime Brian Lee in the tournament where he, you know, let's remember he laid waste to him after he won that match. He beat the shit out of him with a chair.
Another candidate for government cheese would be Jim Cornette in general, because this is the first milestone probably of his promotion getting off the ground.
Agreed. Cornette would get some government cheese on this one as well. So, again, the government cheese award is brought to you by Shard Johnson. It was his idea on Facebook, and we've navigated it into the Smoky Mountain show. So there you go. All right, Doc. So you know how we always do it. We got to get some of our plugs in. We had a lot going on this episode, but we appreciate you all tuning in to this week's Smoky Mountain Wrestling Podcast. Please subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast from, whether it's Podbean, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, TuneIn Radio, iTunes. If you enjoy this show, please give us a 5-star review on iTunes. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps the show. And then go back and say those other 5-star reviews were helpful. So there's a thing where you can click yes. Please do that. Follow us on Twitter. We're at @BTT_podcast. I'm at @Mike504Saints. Hardbody Harper is not on right now, but if you want to follow him, he's at @CJHWhoDat. I just want to thank all of the parody accounts, the I Have Gibson, at @FakeStanLane, at @HolyMolyOly, at @DenimFritz605. At Mike Skills Tim, at Mullet of Morton. Did I say the I.F. Gibson? If I didn't, I did now. We appreciate you all tuning in to the episode. The parody accounts are awesome. As this airs, there's a parody account invitational going on as we record this. So I don't know who the winner is at this point, but shout out to Martin Howell on Twitter. He's the one who put the parody account invitational, tag team invitational together. Doc, did I miss anything?
No.
Check out our Pro Wrestling Tees store, because I know I missed that one. Go to Facebook.com/BookingTheTerritory. Click the Shop Now button. You can get your very own Pro Wrestling Tees, Booking the Territory t-shirt, or the Smoky Mountain Wrestling Podcast t-shirt. Hey, if you love the show so much, as much as we love doing it, check us out on and click our PayPal donation link. If you click it, give us a buck or two. We'd greatly appreciate it. I'm in the process of setting up a patron page, not one of those Patreons, but a patron page where what you can do is basically you can decide to like donate a buck a month to the show. So think about it. Let's say you gave us 12 bucks a year. Man, that's not a lot. That's less than what it costs you to order pizza nowadays from Pizza Hut or Domino's. So if you love the show, once I set up the patron page, you can help us out that way as well. That's all I got for this week's episode of our Smoky Mountain Wrestling Podcast. We appreciate you tuning in. Again, this week we were recording from Harrogate, Tennessee, in the Lincoln Memorial University gymnasium as we covered the Volunteer Slam, which took place May the 22nd, 1992. This episode aired May 30th of 1992. We appreciate you tuning in. From Mike and Doc, you know what we always say when we get out of here. I think there may be a promo after this. I'm not sure. We covered most of them on the episode. If not, we'll catch you next week. Book it, bitch.
Would you say Hunter is anxious?
Well, he may be a little bit over-anxious. He may let that emotion run wild. That's happened to the Fantastic a couple of weeks ago. And they ended up with Jackie Fulton out of action for a while.
Well, you can't.
So you're trying to say you think Tim Horner has a legitimate claim?
Yeah, I think
he's
got a legitimate claim to that. That's
well,
right.
Well, I don't think, and now if the referee didn't see Buddy Landale go over the top rope, that's the breaks. I think Horner should abide by that. And I don't know, what would Tim Horner do with $5,000 anyway? Soup up his truck?
Well,
or
it wasn't only the
buy
fact.
Him a gun rack or buy him a cow or something. What would he do with $5,000? At least Buddy Landale has always spent his money wisely.
He might take him a nice vacation or something, you know, or buy him a new wardrobe or stick it in the bank or get him a CD or something like that, Dutch.
Oh.
You know,
Tim Horner's from the Smoky Mountains. People in the Smoky Mountains don't have enough sense to do anything with their money.